Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. Arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight it's all doo-wop once again as we move toward Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll. That's a 6 headliner concert coming to the California Theater in San Bernardino December 16th with the Marcells, the Tokens, the Chantels, the Mystics, Lala Brooks of the Crystals, and the Skyliners. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. Later in the program, we'll go to an interview I had recently with George Galfo of the Mystics. We'll hear about Hushabye from the Mystics and the Beach Boys, and much more, of course. We're going to start with another recent conversation, Lala Brooks, going on 13 when she joined the Crystals, only 15 when she sung the lead on a couple of the group's biggest hits. First, though, as per usual, I was certainly curious about her name, Lala. It was Dolores to pretty much only her father, Lala to almost everyone else.
It came to my sister. We were 2 years apart. And I guess she couldn't pronounce Dolores. And you know, that leads to sometimes Lolo, Dololo, or whatever. And then it came to be Lala.
Okay.
And ever since that, they called me Lala.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's start with the Little Gospel Tears. Who and what were these for you?
Well, I started when I was 7 in the Gospel Church. And the Little Gospel Tears was my brother, my sister, and my niece. And we used to sing every Sunday in the Gospel Churches.
Wow.
And sometimes we'd go around to other churches and sing. And that day, there was a very famous group called the Clara Ward Singers. And we were the little group that she would let us go to the church with her. And we'd be the little children that would sing gospel.
That is so nice. And, you know, and the thing is, I knew that it was a gospel church group, but I had no idea it was a family event. It was you and some of your siblings. That's really nice.
Yeah, it was some of my siblings, yeah.
And were there 11 of you? Did I read that right?
Yeah, that's 11 of us.
Were there more of you involved musically, or were you the only one that took off?
Well, my older brother, he could sing, and my mom, she had a nice voice, but no one took it seriously. I was the only one that, I guess, had the voice, you know?
Okay. Well, that was definitely proved to the world in a big way with the Crystals. And so, again, basic stuff here, but tell me about the name of the group, the Crystals. Was this purely a Phil Spector thing? Did he name you, or did you guys come in with that name?
We came in with the name. One of the girls in the group, her name is Patsy Wright, and she had an older sister. And her older sister had a little girl that was about 3 at the time we were started, and her name was Crystal. And when the group started, they tried to figure out what name could we have. So they used Patsy Wright's sister's daughter's name.
Oh, nice.
Because her name is Crystal.
Okay.
And that's where they got the name from.
Wow, you could have been the Belindas had it gone some other way.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh. Okay. I understand that the beginning of you with the Crystals, you were discovered in an after-school program by Dee Dee, one of the other original... Tell me about this day, this moment, how this all came to...
It wasn't by Dee Dee, it was Dee Dee's mom. See, before I met Dee Dee and the other girls, I was with Dee Dee's mom, and a person that I used to always see her with was my gym teacher, Mr. Lynch. And in fact, I thought she was married to Mr. Lynch because they were together all the time, but she... Because I was a kid, I don't know the difference.
Sure.
But she worked in the school, like after-school programs. So what would happen is that because my mom, she didn't want us to play on the street, so she would give us an option to either stay in the house or go back to school and do some kind of recreation, whether it's drawing, learning something else, or revising your studies or whatever. So this particular day I went back, like I would do every day at 3:30. I walked into the school as usual, and I hear this piano, and I followed the piano. This is piano playing, and Mrs. Henry, which is Dee Dee's mom, she was the overseer for the children to make sure we don't fight, to make sure we don't get in trouble. If we had any problems, we would go to her and ask her. And when I walked in, she said, "What do you want to play today, Lala? You going to play volleyball? You going to jump rope? You going to, you know, interact with the kids?" And so when I heard this piano, all I can think of was, I want to find out where that piano is.
Mm.
So I when she started working with the other children, I just walked down the hallway and I followed the piano sound. And it was a man, and his name was Leo. So I just stood at the door and I said, "Could I sing?" And he said, "Can you?" And I said, "Yeah." And I walked in there and I started singing. And then Dee Dee's mom, with the group, Dee Dee Kennebo's mom, heard me. And she came down and she stood in the door and she listened. And she said to me after I finished, she said, "Was that you with that big voice, the little girl with that big voice?" And I said, "Yes." And so she said, "You know, well, would you like to join a Crystals group?" And I said, "Yeah." Me being silly, I was only 12 and a half.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying yes, you know, because I knew I could sing. singing gospel. And then I thought about it, and I said, well, you have to speak to my mom first. You know? And then she said, I sure do, because, you know, she was a very beautiful woman. She knew about children and how, you know, the mothers were very important to ask any questions to. So she came to my house. She asked my mom. My mom was a little bit leery because I was so young. I was like 12 and a half at that time.
Sure.
And my mom questioned her. And then she said, by Lala being the youngest, we naturally, when we travel on the road, we would have a guardian for her. And they had a guardian for me. Now, the guardian was Patsy Wright. She was in a group, like I said. Mm-hmm. Patsy Wright's mother was available. She came on the road with us, and she traveled with us. So she was a guardian for me.
So you weren't necessarily this scared little girl out on the road. You had somebody to trust and look up to and take care of you in those earliest of days.
Yeah, I always had somebody there to make sure I wouldn't do things bad or, you know, everything's not as peaches and cream in show business, but I was always protected. And then after I got to group, I was going to PS 73, which was a public school. I was taken out of that and I was put into a private school.
Okay.
And so when I went into private school, I was in a private school with Anthony Quinn's son, Duncan Quinn. I was in school with Patty Duke. I was in school with Bernadette Peters.
Oh, wow.
And Dinah Washington's two sons. I was in school with very famous children.
Yes, you were.
The world of slaves is at his feet when he needs a
Music from the Crystals and conversation with Lala Brooks. Brooks is part of a 6 headliner concert coming to the California Theater December 16th, along with the Marcells, the Tokens, the Mystics, the Chantels, and the Skyliners. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online at kvcrnews.org. How long were you in the Crystals before And Then He Kissed Me and To Do Ron Ron? How long was that? Because you were 12, going on 13 when you joined.
Well, I turned 13. That year, I turned 13 in the summertime. And then we did our first tour. I was 13. We did our first tour with James Brown. And then Barbara was doing the lead. Phil was recording Crystals in New York. And Barbara was doing the lead. She did There's Not Like My Baby Uptown. And she did What a Nice Way to Turn 17. A lot of songs Phil just used her on. Eventually, when he found out I could sing, he knew I could sing, but, you know, I was so young. And I was very strong, very powerful. Like, I would sing background on Barbara's things, but they had to push me in the back because it was so big, so loud. And but eventually, I got to do the lead. I was doing the lead on stage most of the time, so that's how I get to be lead singer, too. I was doing the Barbara's, when she sang There's No Other Like My Baby and Uptown. When we'd play the Apollo or we'd play shows, Barbara was very shy, but I didn't know it, you know. She would always ask me when I'd come off stage, and I'm 13, she'd say, Lala, do you want to do There's No Other Like My Baby and Uptown on the next show? And I said, yeah. You know, I was like the young ham, you know, teenager.
Sure. Yeah.
So I did that. And from that day on, she didn't want to do the lead, so I would do the lead.
This had to have been sort of a confusing mix for you of, am I embarking on a professional career or am I just having a blast as a kid?
I think I just was having a blast as a kid because I didn't, I wasn't, I was so young to key into about fame and being pompous and a diva. I didn't grow up like that. I didn't grow up like, my mom was very grounded and she made sure I was grounded. So I never, even to today, I never had that diva kind of things. In fact, fans come up to me and they're excited. I'm like, huh? And I'm so much normal and I love the fans. In fact, I hate to even say they're fans because it sounds so much, I'm so humble, you know, I'm just so grateful to them. And sometimes I'm embarrassed to say they're fans, you know.
It puts a separation between you and them by using
that. Yeah, and I don't like that, you know. Yeah. I love them and they love me. And in fact, some of the fans that I write to on Facebook, I've been out to their house. I've been to the movies with them. I've been to Coney Island with them. I go to their house and I eat dinner.
Some of these, quote, fans are really just people wandering around the village somewhere, just people that you could run into at the market.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Beautiful.
And a lot of them, when they become fans, they become friends. One girlfriend of mine, so I was walking down the street, Paula, and she was staring at me. She kind of scared me, you know. She kept staring and staring. And I was walking to the store, and she was coming up to me, and I said, oh, my God, what is this about? But she was too afraid to say anything. And finally, when I turned around, I said, do you have anything to say? Or whatever I said to her was like startled because I was kind of like nervous.
Yeah.
And then when she says, oh my God, "Are you Lala Brooks?" And I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "I saw you at Lincoln Center, Darlene Love, and somebody else." And she was so sweet. And I was saying, "Oh, thank you." And she's my best friend now. We go to the movie.
Oh, cool. Oh, nice. Nice.
Anytime I need a movie partner, I call her. I said, "Paul, you want to go see this movie?" She said, "Yeah." After we go to the movie, we go have tea and coffee, and then we have something to eat. She's my best friend.
That I suppose that you were most involved with and people will look back the most often on are "And Then He Kissed Me" and "Doo-Doo Ron Ron," of course. "And Then He Kissed Me," did you end up later getting royalties or anything like that? "And Then He Kissed Me" was so big in movies much later on, Adventures in Babysitting and Goodfellas. Do you have any back end, I guess?
They called me just now, not too long ago, about 2 weeks ago. But I had been getting royalties from another source, from other records, you know, from the Crystals, maybe a Christmas album, just general royalties,
okay.
You know, from probably airplay or something like that. But I just got a call from other people now. Maybe I'll get some royalties from that. But, you know, Phil had locked everything up at one point. Everything was going to Phil Spector, you know.
Okay. It's so unfortunate. You hear about that kind of thing so much that people were so huge but got a few dimes out of it.
You know, but then again, you know, when you think about it, I try to put in a positive thing, because if you don't, you get mad and want to go there and strangle somebody.
Yeah.
but you put it in a perspective where, you know, you can't take it with you. You're just going in a box with yourself and your soul and your one suit. You know, all that other stuff is going to stay here. Nothing really belongs to us. We leave it here for somebody else continuously. So if Phil Spector ever thinks that he's going in a box, or anybody, with millions that he stole from me, he's going with a record that says he stole from young teenagers. So that's recorded. So I would rather not have the money. It's like you reap what you sow, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I had good days with Phil. I can't say I hate Phil or dislike him or... But I don't care who it is. You know, whether it's Phil, whether it's my brother, whether it's my sister. When you take from somebody that's so young and you want everything for yourself, karma comes back to you. And I think that's what happened with Phil Spector, even though I love him.
Sure.
In my way, because I was a teenager. And I still would love to meet him again and say, you know, I forgive you. But karma comes back, you know, but comes back in a different way. It doesn't come back from what you did to me, you know, because that's recorded already. But it'll be set up where you do something to someone else that is not in the business. And you have to pay for that.
You've almost inspired me to put that on my tombstone, and that is that Phil Spector stole from teenagers.
I was a kid, you know, yeah. I mean, I was only 13 years old, and we didn't come from a lot of money. We were a humble family. We didn't have anything. I mean, my dad worked a 9-to-5 job. My mother stayed at home. We were just typical family. And then we were very famous, and the name is famous, and we worked hard. You know, we worked from the time I was 13. I never asked my mother for a pair of shoes. You know, I bought everything myself. You know, she would have given it to me naturally, but why ask my mom when she's just, dad has just had a regular job, not a lot of money. I pay for myself. So I paid for everything I bought when I was 13, from the time I was 13. And you mean to tell me Phil Spector's a grown man and he tried to shortchange all of us? For what?
Right.
What?
It keeps on stacking up and it means nothing after a while.
Yeah, and now where can he use it? He's in prison. Where can you use the money now? He's locked up.
Yeah.
Sad. It's so sad. And if he would have done the right thing, maybe in the stars or in the skies, you would have been protected.
Sure.
You know, in some way. But when you do ruthless things, you have to just wait for the karma to come.
Music from the Crystals in conversation with Lala Brooks. Brooks is part of a 6-headliner concert coming to the California Theater December 16th, along with the Marcells, the Tokens, the Mystics, the Chantels, and the Skyliners. AffordableMusicProductions.com for tickets and information. Later in the program, we'll hear from George Galfo of the Mystics. First, though, more with Lala Brooks. Lala, one of your other huge, huge hits with the Crystals, To Do Ron Ron. Now, I'm at the perfect age to have known Sean Cassidy coming out with that song. Now, what I have to say is he waited until he was 19 to come out with this. By your standards, isn't 19 a little old for this, don't you think?
I guess old for the year of lyrics. It is kind of old for the lyrics, especially a guy. But I mean, he took it from somebody. There's a big difference. Because he took it from me as a teenager. I can let him off the hook a little bit and say, okay, it's all right. Another kid, yeah.
Did you hear To Do Ron Ron on the radio, or did you know that this Sean Cassidy was about to bring this song out?
No, I heard about it, yeah.
And then the same thing, was that the same thing with And Then He Kissed Me, as far as it being used in these movies? It's in one of the most famous scenes of Goodfellas, this long, long entrance.
I know, when they sit at the table.
Yes.
I know the scene so well.
Oh, yeah.
Because many a day I watched that movie and said, damn it, I wish I had the money that they playing this movie over. My youngest daughter, she's 40. She has 4 children. They range from age like 4 to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And her son is 11 and the baby is 4. 2 girls in between. But my older daughter, who's 43, she lives in Vienna. I just had my granddaughter over for the summer. She knows about me. And they're mixed with Austrian and black. She's very beautiful too. She'll be 18. But she knows a lot about my background. She may not know about Goodfellas. I must tell her about that when I see her again, when I go over there and see her.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
After the Crystals broke up, with you being so young when you joined the Crystals, you couldn't have been very old when they broke up. How old were you at this point?
I was like my 20s.
So is that
I got married, and then I went to Broadway. When I left the group, I went to Broadway. I was an original cast in Hair with Diane Keaton, Melba Moore, Keith Carradine, Ronnie Dyson. I did Aquarius in Hair.
Yes, I'm a theater geek as well, and so when I saw that, oh my gosh. But you didn't end up on the soundtrack. That was a different recording.
Yeah, the soundtrack, well, my husband did the soundtrack and played the drums for everything.
Idris Muhammad?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He played it off-Broadway, and then it went to Broadway. So he did everything with Hair, even when it wasn't on Broadway. He played all the music. He made everything for the Hair. He made all the drum sounds, drum beats, and everything.
Wow. Now, that's another wonderful connection that I know about him as, you know, basically one of the sidemen with Pharoah Saunders or, you know, some of these folks from way back when in my jazz library, but I had no idea that he was such an integral part of Hair. That
oh, yes. If it wasn't for him, there wouldn't be a Hair, I don't think, because the only thing he didn't do was copyright the drum beat. Every drum beat in Hair belonged to him. And we used to panic when I started Hair. We used to panic when he'd have to take one day off, because sometimes he'd have a record date with, you know, Coltrane, one of them, Dizzy Gillespie, because he was a jazz musician. Well, he was a rock and roll player, because he did all of Sam Cooke's things, and he did a lot of Fats Domino's things, too.
Hmm, didn't know that a part of it.
Played the drums, he did a lot. Oh, my God. Nat Adderley, Fats Domino, Roberta Flack.
Oh, my God.
God, he did Keep On Pushing. He did all of Curtis Mayfield's sound, too, from the back of the day. He did all the drum beats for that.
Wow.
So when he'd get out of Hair and say that he had a record date, we'd be running around and saying, oh, my God, Idris is not here. What are we going to do? Because he'd give us the cue for every beat.
Right.
He was a genius. He really was.
Wow.
The drums. The only thing he didn't, copyright the drum beats.
Mm.
He went to go to do it, but they got into some kind of, you know, sharing thing, and I think my husband got kind of like, why share when it belongs to me, you know, that kind of technical stuff, and next thing you know, and that stuff. But he made Hair what it was.
Wow.
And then when I got in it, I did Aquarius.
Is there a recording of that out there anywhere?
No, I did it on Ed Sullivan, if they ever played it that. I'm not doing Aquarius, but I'm on the Tony Awards. up on the top of the thing with Melba Moore, and we're doing another piece of work with me.
Getting away from music then, but still on Broadway, you also did Two Gentlemen of Verona? And if so, which character were you?
Well, I did one of the main singers. It was only four singers, and I was the main singer, main character singer in the play. They wanted me to do the principal, understudy the principal, which was...
Sylvia?
Her name. Sylvia.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. Lord have mercy, I couldn't do it. That's what they picked me for. They picked me for the voice, and they picked me because they made us look alike. Same kind of body. Same kind of face, you know.
Gotcha.
You know how they do that? When you go for auditions, they sort of have in mind, oh, she can do this, she can do chorus, but she can also do the principal. When they came for me for the principal, I said, no, I didn't want to do it, the understudy, because I didn't like the scene where they go into a tent and Sylvia lays on the ground on the tent and the guy gets on top of her. I was turned away from that. I wasn't raised like that. You know, and so then the girls in the play started fighting over the part. And I let them fight over the part because I didn't want to have anything to do with it. Singing, yes. Or a little bit of acting, yes, I could do that. But I can't do that kind of thing. I just couldn't do it. And when I'd hear her in the tent screaming and yelling and she's on top of it, I just couldn't do it. I said, no money in the world.
Yeah.
My morals were different.
Yes.
You know? And I was raised different. You know, I was raised... My mothers were very protective. I was protected on the road. I was very classy. I go crazy on stage, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
That's just a part of happiness. But in order to go into a tent on the play, it just was too awkward for me. I couldn't do it. They were upset because I realized they hired me for the voice and to do the chorus. They also hired me to do the principal, to understudy it, to Sylvia. But I was too shy and embarrassed to do it.
Really quickly, I know that you also contributed songs to movie soundtracks, Cotton Comes to Harlem. What did you contribute to that?
Me and Melvin Moore and Nita Galloway, we did all the soundtracks. I did We're Going Home, when you're running through the street, I recorded that, We're Going Home, it's called. Great song, great gospel song. And I also did all the background, and I did another song with Nita Galloway. She did one part, and I did one part. But as far as the whole sound, me, Melba, and Nita Galloway did the whole score of Cotton Comes to Harlem, and we were also in it.
I'm going to have to look again, then.
We played the gospel part.
Okay, cool.
Gospel singers. And Calvin Lockhart, he comes on stage, and he pushes us. And Melba's there, and Nita, so we're in the movie, too. I was about 22 then.
Oh, that is too cool. That is really great. Lala Brooks, formerly of the Crystals, and most currently one of six headlining acts as part of Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll, coming to San Bernardino soon. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR.
You gave me strength when I was down. You showed me love, turned my life around. Just wanna say thanks for the day.
I'm hovering around asking you, when did you come back to music? But that really implies that you left. So I want to hear, I guess, about All or Nothing. When was this released? This was just a couple of years ago, maybe?
I think 2013, if I'm not mistaken.
I have no liner notes in front of me. So I have to just ask you then, did you write any of these tunes? Did you go picking tunes that you wanted to present? Or was this a manager? How did this album come together, please?
Well, Norton Records, they always wanted to record me and made me an offer, and I said, okay, you know. The only thing I didn't like is the music part in the background. I think they should have had better musicians, and it was okay. But I only wrote one song on there, and I wrote You Gave Me Love. I wrote the lyrics and the music for that. And it could have done well if they would have had better musicians. It was only like two people there doing it. What can I tell you? It's something that could have been so great to do.
Wow.
I mean, to sell, you know what I'm saying?
But yes.
If you want to do it on a cheap dime, I think they just wanted the name. That's what I think.
Oh, gosh. On the cover, it doesn't even say Lala Brooks. It says Lala Brooks of the Crystals. Yeah, they're cashing in on something from a long time ago.
Right. So I think it was more so about the company. You know, somebody will use you whenever they can use you. So that's what happened.
Well, there's the
I got paid for it, but you still work for royalties from them, you know.
Right.
People are people. I like the album, but I just wish they would have spent more time on bringing musicians in instead of using two people and somebody's wife in the studio to tap on something.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
You know, that's what happened.
It's a solid album, I think, but I think the next time I listen to it, I may be hearing it with a different ear. It's such a presentation of soul and rock and roll, some R&B.
Well, you know, if you want to be truthful, whoever they put down there, Big Nick or somebody else has producers, I produced that album. I showed them what to do. I put that R&B. I put everything there that I wanted for them to do. That's why they would have had great musicians there and musicians in the studio.
Gotcha.
Forget how you look tonight. Never mind your style. Leather boots and jeans so tight. Take away your
I helped produce that. I helped put it together. No, don't do this. They sent me some stuff that I think Nick, he was playing so loud and so I said, okay, this company is for rock and roll. They want that hard rock, that crazy rock. So they're covering up my voice. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And it's not because I'm being cocky or arrogant or pompous, but you don't do things like that. I'm not a hard rocker. I mean, I don't mind doing it because it's fun and I don't mind reaching out to other areas. I'd like to do country. I'm dying to do a country song. All my life I wanted to do country. I would love to do a hip-hop kind of thing to learn how they do the way they speak so quickly.
Oh, yeah.
But the point is that you make an album where everybody benefits from it.
Yes.
And let it fit like a glove. You know,
I was excited about this relatively new album, but it sounds like it was a bad thing in your memories and for your personal experience. We're looking forward to seeing you December 16th. You are one of six acts. You couldn't call any one of these the headliner. It's six groups, I should say, sharing a bill. When you're performing a doo-wop era concert, do you break out anything from All or Nothing, or do you stick with To Do Ron Ron and Then He Kissed Me?
There's... Well, I have to because they're not familiar with that kind of music.
How about A Boy Like You? That has a slight feel of It Could Go Back.
Yes, I've done that. I like that.
Okay.
But don't get me wrong. I love the album. I've done A Boy Like You. I love that song. But sometimes with doo-wop, they're not familiar. You have to do songs you're familiar with.
Of course.
But I've done that on stage. I've done some of the album. A lot of the songs I did in Spain. And when I have my own show here, I do them, you know. It's gonna be so.
That was Lala Brooks, one of six headlining acts as part of Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll. That's the Marcells, the Tokens, the Chantels, the Mystics, Lala Brooks, and the Skyliners. AffordableMusicProductions.com for tickets and information. To close out the program now, we have music from the Mystics in conversation with one of the original members, George Galfall.
Not first there came Adam, then there came Eve.
Before I even get into music, the first thing I'd like to hear about is you guys throwing names into a hat. to even become the Mystics. But before that, you were the Overon, so I'd like to address just what is an Overon.
Oh, you know, that's something I've dwelled over all these years and still don't know what it means. They just thought we were over and on at the time as far as singing goes. But, you know, we don't even know how we got the name. I don't remember how we got the name. All I know is the Laurie Records didn't care for it. And that's why we all picked some names out and threw them in a hat and picked one up. And it was, lo and behold, it was the Mystics.
It became the Mystics. That's definitely one of the funniest name origin stories that I ever got, brief as it was. I've been able to track down a few of the Overon's recordings. I found things like Bells Are Ringing, Prayer to an Angel, and I love Big Brown Eyes.
Well, we wrote those songs before we even got to go professional with anything, before we went to Laurie Records. We had them songs, and there were our demos, which we started to show people what we can do. But unfortunately, Laurie didn't like any of them, and
we didn't
do them.
Oh, my gosh. So was Adam and Eve then the first recording with Laurie?
That's correct.
Okay.
That they thought was the A side, which evidently it turned out not to be.
Yeah, nope. And did I read correctly, Weem Away, the Weavers tune?
Yeah, we were rehearsing that, and we brought that up to Laurie, too. And they didn't think it was, I don't know, their opinions of the different songs. They had their own way of wanting to hear what they wanted to hear. And, you know, lo and behold, the Tokens came out with it and made a big hit with it.
Oh, huge, huge. So we ended up having Hushabye written for you by Mort Schumann and Doc Pomus. This was the first real big hit, but the first song they wrote, I want to hear this story about you being in the office and hearing A Teenager in Love and how it got given away.
Well, way back in early 1959, when we met with Laurie Records, they brought up a couple of the authors that were writing songs for them. And they liked our sound, and they said, well, we got a song just for you. And they brought up Teenager in Love. So that was originally written for the Mystics, you know. But like I said, when we were rehearsing it, Dion was in the office, and he heard it. He said, guys, you know, I think the Belmonts and myself would love to do that song. So being new and naive as we were at the time, and so glad just to be there, he had a couple of hits already. So we said, okay, Dion, it's yours. And we voluntarily gave it away, and it became a major hit because they did a wonderful job on it.
Oh, yeah. And how would you say no to Dion? This is, I suppose, a nice favor for somebody that you're impressed with at that point in your life.
Well, but, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We were impressed with them. Next, we looked up to them as some of the artists we used to mimic on the street corners. So we were just glad to be there and meet with him and the group. They were wonderful guys. They had great sounds. So I figured, what can go wrong? The song like Teenager in Love. Yeah. And they did a heck of a job on it.
Oh, my God, they did, yeah. But is there a version by chance of the Mystics doing Teenager in Love? I did find something on YouTube with you guys referring to
show. I use it as a part of our history.
Oh, good.
And I tell a little story on stage about it and how it came about. And this is the song that we almost had.
Well, and then, as I understand it then, it was truly the very next day that the same writers came back in with Hushabye. Is that true?
Well, it took a couple more days.
Okay.
Yeah, they figured they'd go along something, a little star as, you know, a lullaby. And they came up with, thank goodness, it was Hushabye, and they had two major hits that same year.
Nice. Well, tell us about the timeline of the song, that is to say, becoming a hit, then ending up as the closing tune on Alan Freed's Saturday Night Big Beat show.
Yeah, Alan loved the song, so he closed his show with it every time he had the show. And, you know, we were very proud that he picked our song like that. And we were on his show quite a few times.
So at this point in musical history, you could have regional charting as well as national charting. It was such a thing back then. Now, these were the days of promoters actually going to radio stations with records in hands. And was the band ever involved in that kind of promotion? You have memories of five guys crammed in the car on your way to Hoboken or somewhere? There's another AM station there.
Yeah, we did quite a few PR on it, some radio stations, and, you know, Lori had great distribution, so they got the songs out to the DJs at the time who loved the song, and they played it. You know, thank God for the DJs and yourself. If it wasn't for them, I mean, they made the hits. If they liked the song, they played it. It became a hit.
They launched so many things, and it all had to do with whether or not they had that thing in their hands. That's incredible. Don't Take the Stars. This is a song I'd like to know a little bit about. I don't know if you even know much about this man, Mark Harris. I understand he was shown songs that were rejected by the Mystics, and then that's when he wrote Don't Take the Stars over the weekend.
Well, I don't remember rejecting anything, but
okay.
I remember
okay.
when Don't Take the Stars came about, and Lori loved it, and that was our second release with them. It was the end of 1959. Going back down with Freed, you know, we did 10 days in the Brooklyn Fox with him, and that's when we met all the people that we looked up to at the time. We knew the Skyliners and the Crest, and they were all there, and we were on stage with them. We were in awe, you know.
Oh, of course. Oh, my gosh. Before we move on, talk to me about the neighborhood scene. You alluded to this a second ago. Those pictures that we get in our heads of groups on every other street corner. And I'm asking this not only for a picture to be painted in the mind's eye, but also it seems that everybody in today's lineup of the Mystics, whether or not they were original Mystic and or Oberon, whatever that is, everybody was a part of that scene around the five boroughs in New York, singing on the street corner. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, there was us. We were all friends, naturally. We were all in the same area. There was us, there was the Passions, and there was the Classics. Us three were always involved with each other, getting together, singing and having fun. We enjoyed doing it at the time on the corners and wherever we can get an echo, naturally.
Yeah. Subways and bathrooms.
We were the first ones that actually got the recording contract. And then we brought up the Passions and so forth and so on, and they all had their own contracts going later on, and they all did well.
It was all friends helping each other, just guys in the neighborhood.
Oh, absolutely. You know, David, at that time there were so many, many groups. I can't even name the amount of groups in Brooklyn and Bronx and Staten Island and Long Island that sang. They were great, but you know, it was just timing. If you were in the right place at the right time and the right people heard you, well, that's what happens.
Well, you did end up on American Bandstand twice, if I understand right.
Oh, yes, yes. We did feature Hushabye and Don't Take the Stars on the Dick Clark American Bandstand.
Did Dick Clark...
In fact, when we had to do that, we were out west the first time on tour, and Dick Clark wanted us to be on the show, so they had to fly us back to Philadelphia. We taped the show that night and then flew back immediately to go to tour so we can continue with it. And here we are the next day in a restaurant eating, and they had a TV up there. And lo and behold, we're looking at a Dick Clark show, and there we were. And the people that were around us were saying, well, how is that possible? You guys are here, and you're on the TV with Dick Clark. So they didn't realize it was taped at the time.
You know, it would be funny for anybody right now to go back to the American Bandstand clips that you can find on YouTube and not realizing that you guys were probably jet-lagged severely, at least.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we were young. Didn't matter then. We could bounce.
Yeah, that's true. That's a
big No, we don't bounce.
No, I don't bounce. I can't imagine you bouncing. So.
Well, I don't know if you're my age, but we don't bounce. I'm 78 now. Uncle Philly, who is the other original that's both going to be there, he's just turned 80.
That's music from the Mystics, a conversation with original member George Galfo. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Coming to the California Theater in San Bernardino, December 16th, it's Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll. That's the Marcells, the Tokens, the Chantels, Lala Brooks, the Skyliners, and the Mystics. AffordableMusicProductions.com for tickets and information. Well, we're going to be returning to Hushabye in a few different forms throughout this.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we're talking about now the Beach Boys. They not only cite you guys as a heavy influence, but they also ended up recording Hushabye. And I'm curious if you were aware of it as it was happening or if you heard it on the radio later. You got a check and then started.
Well, we got wind of it, naturally. they did a beautiful job. You know, Beach Boys was one of our favorites, too. So we were glad that it's another honor for them to cover our song. Jay and the Americans have their own version of it, too.
So speaking of which, then, at some point, the Mystics chose John Traynor, who later on went to form Jay and the Americans.
Yeah.
When or how did this association with Jay start? The Mystics were already together. Was it an audition or somebody knew him and said, man, we need Jay now?
Yeah, well, Philly went on. He took a little, he went on his own for temporarily trying to do something. And that's when we met Jay Traynor. He was up at our manager's office. He said, you know, this guy's a nice kid, and he could sing. Of course, we had, at the time, we had to put another couple of records out per our contract with Laurie. So we said, sure. And Jay was a great kid. I mean, we got really friendly and really to know him all through the years. And there's another one, unfortunately, that we did lose. But we introduced him at the time when Philly was coming back to the Americans, and that's where he was the first Jay and the Americans.
Yes.
Who recorded She Cried.
There's a rainbow in the sky. Oh, how I wish that I could fly somewhere.
Had several nice tunes with Jay on the lead. Blue Star
and Over the Rainbow.
Specifically, yes, Over the Rainbow.
We had our own version of it. I mean, it was a big hit, nationally known. I mean, since 1939 when it came out in the movie with Judy Garland sang lead on it. It was a fantastic number, and everybody knew it. So it was a great song to do, and the Mystics did their own version of it. And it was on The Sopranos, which they ended one of their series with it at the end of the show. And they were playing this song. Not many people know that, but we were honored that they picked out a cut of that Over the Rainbow.
In all honesty, I have to admit that I did have that written down as a follow-up, that when it was used in The Sopranos, just on the jukebox in the background.
Exactly.
And again, was this a situation that you guys know about this ahead of time? Somebody's management called
somebody? No, we did not. Not until years later. Jay heard it when he was watching The Sopranos. And then we contacted the people necessary to contact with that, and we did get some royalties out of it.
Now, I understand, is this correct? Over the Rainbow remained unreleased until the late 80s?
Yeah, for some reason, but I don't know how the Sopranos got it. But it was held up for quite some time with Laurie. They shelved a few of the songs and then released them at the time they should have, but they have their own reasons for that. Another history, I'm sure you know about it. I know about all the other people out there, about Paul Simon. He put in temporarily position with us when Jay left. We needed to, you know, get a couple more tunes out. And so Paul Simon, he was another kid that was hanging around at the office there. He was only 17 at the time. Well, we used to kid him a lot. We teased him quite a bit because he was younger than us, you know. So we cut a couple of tunes with Paul. One was All Through the Night and To Think Again of You. So he's on those two cuts.
Long before Garfunkel, we have Paul with you guys. Oh, now that's got to be just a kick.
Who knew what he was going to turn into today?
No kidding. That's fantastic.
And still going, yeah.
That was just a footnote that I hoped that you would address. I so appreciate that.
I see your face before me. The lips I used to kiss. You will. Please adore me each time I.
Now, the Mystics, I understand, got back together again and performed in the late 60s, but then at some point you started performing with your Mystics. So can you tell me about this timeline? Were there a couple of different Mystics for a while, or was it sort of interweaving between members?
Well, yeah, the Mystics, most of them, they stayed back north. I ended up down here in Florida. I came back for a couple of special shows that we had, all the originals. That's the only time I went back during the 70s. But in 1982 is when they recorded the Ambient album, and mm-hmm. that's when they put the other songs on that you mentioned before, The Bells Are Ringing and Prayer to an Angel and the things that we did right at the time. And they did put on that album. When Philly moved back down here to Florida, and we got together again. It was about 1998, 1999. And we start getting together and put the group together and start singing. So in 2002, there was a little discrepancy. That's nothing personal, but mm-hmm. he did his own thing and I did my own thing. And then through the years, we got together again. So yes. that's where we are today, and we're having a great time together.
Nice. Good, good. Now, this is something that I found on the website, which is simply theoriginalmystics.com. I read that you, I think, at some point found recordings of the Mystics and the Vidals teaming up?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a reel that I had that I even forgot I had had it. All these years when the Vidals and us got together while I was still down in the New York area in Brooklyn, we got very friendly. We got together. We did shows as the Vidals and the Mystics. Okay. It was quite funny because we did it at Palisades Park that way. And it was a funny thing at the time, but they were great guys. There were five songs we did a cappella that we were rehearsing at the time. I sent a copy to Vincent from the Vidals and let him know we had it. And Al Contreras, let's see, there was my other uncle, was Albie Krakalisi, who was on it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, there was the three Mystics and two Vidals. And that thing was a godsend. I mean, I didn't even know I had it all these years. And boy, I was shocked when I heard it.
Now, another thing on your website, this is a severe side note, Devil Dogs and Yankee Doodles. Yeah, you guys working on an endorsement by Drake's Cakes,
that
by chance?
That is funny. That really is funny. You know, they've been calling us up at times and then, you know, they thank us for promoting their products. Because when we came down here in Florida and, you know, we were talking about the old things, what we used to do when we were kids coming home from school and what we enjoyed, and there were Devil Dogs and Yankee Doodles, which were nowhere to be found in Florida.
No.
So we contacted them, and lo and behold, we got them in stores down here, and then we started, we probably heard that we like Devil Dogs, and every time we came up north and did a show, they gave us boxes of Devil Dogs.
Sweet.
Our fans kept giving us boxes of Devil Dogs. It was so funny.
Do they still?
Yeah.
Good,
they do.
Good.
I'll keep telling them, please, no more. We got plenty. We can buy them here now in Florida. Besides, you know, I keep eating these things. I keep putting the pounds on. I got to take it easy.
Oh, my God. Yes, indeed. Speaking of recent audience participation, let's even say, I found a couple of recordings of the audience singing We Love You Mystics, Oh Yes We Do. Now, when did this start happening? Did you guys start this, or did the truly annoying?
Yes, we did.
You did, you did.
Our private shows that we do now here. And we tell them we're going to record it, and if every community we go to, I said, out of the best one, we're going to actually put a CD together with that on it.
Good.
You'll have to sign a waiver, though. And we get them to sing it, and I'm telling you, David, they love it, they love singing it, and it was a good thing to do.
Well, you kick off a show with audience participation, and they're just there for the rest. That is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And we try to do as much as possible, as much as allowed in the communities, you know, as far as no problem with insurance, problems with getting down in the audience.
Do you recall, this has been a different answer for various people from various groups because it affected people different ways. But what did the British invasion do to the Mystics?
Well, the Beatles came in, they were self-contained. Unfortunately, we never learned to play all the instruments, I wish we did.
Okay.
And it was a new era, it started a new trend, and it took the a cappella groups out of the sight for a while. Not entirely, but it did. It did hurt the industry for what we were doing. They had great music, you can't deny it. The younger kids started to take to that. They came in 63. Well, I was still there. In fact, we recorded a song when they did arrive with the Vidals. It didn't go anywhere, naturally, but Pete and Vinny from the Vidals were in charge of that. They were very talented kids, both of them.
You're in the position of having people approach saying, this was my favorite when I was in high school. And we're talking about a period approaching 60 years ago. do you recall when this nostalgic look at doo-wop started to come back around? What did people start calling back out for this wonderful period of music from the, oh, say, mid-50s into the mid-60s?
Well, it never really disappeared entirely.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
The older we got, the more people that wanted to hear us again. And they kept, you know, getting us back into these shows. And, you know, the baby boomers at the time all loved us.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And now the baby boomers' children, the ones that heard the music enough from their parents, are coming to the shows, which we find quite a few of them. And thank God for that. Because
yes.
The shows still have big crowds. We're still packing them in. And it has to do with a lot with the music they played for their children.
When people go to the website, and again, that's theoriginalmystics.com, you get this really cool tune, something about, well, your 55 Chevy was really a blast, just like your Bobby socks, and then you're talking about your hair is thinner and all this type of thing. What and where did this song come from?
Well, it happened way back. I don't know exactly, but we thought it was a cute thing to say to introduce certain shows, and it worked out fine at the time. So I didn't know you were listening to it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah. No, I loved it, and it was a nice surprise for me. Can a person find that anywhere other than the opening page on the website?
No, I don't believe so. I don't think so. That was just one thing we did by ourselves. As far as the show goes, that we're going to be in California, it's going to be featuring a great many acts. Naturally, the Mystics with two original founding members. There's going to be Lala Brooks, the original lead singer of the Crystals, the Marcells, the Chantels, and doing a tribute to Jimmy Beaumont is going to be the Skyliners, which we're looking forward to seeing them again. Jimmy passed away suddenly on October 7th. It was a great shock to us. He will be missed, but never forgotten. There's one thing we did for them. We got them a gig in Italy, outside of Rome, and they'd never been there, but we know the promoter out there who likes us because we were there. And we did get them out there, and Jimmy brought his wife, and they used it as a vacation. And that's just, you know, unfortunately, they did the show, it was great, they came back, and then that's when he got sick and passed away.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so we were so happy that we were able to do that for them. They were very grateful that we did get them there. We were happy that it happened.
That is one of the last, oh, my gosh, wow.
Yeah.
When did you actually meet Jimmy? Way back when, I'm sure.
Oh, 1959, when we did the Alan Freed show in the Fox Theater in Brooklyn. 10 days we were with them, and that's when we really met them and got friendly with them.
So they already had Since I Don't Have You before
yes.
you met
yes.
them?
Yes, and that was one of our favorite tunes. And they had such great tunes out. Jimmy had such control of his voice. He was one of my favorites.
Absolutely.
And Johnny Maestro, too, another icon that we lost. We got very friendly with Johnny. We used to hang out together after he left the Crest. We did a lot of things together, fooling around and getting together and singing all the time. He had a marvelous voice, the voice of an angel. It just got better as he got older.
To me.
Music from the Mystics and conversation with original member George Galfo to close out another edition of KVC Arts. The Mystics, the Marcells, the Chantels, Lala Brooks of the Crystals, and the Skyliners will be at the California Theater in San Bernardino December 16th as Legends of Doo-Wop and Rock and Roll. AffordableMusicProductions.com for tickets and information. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to George Galfo. Thanks also to Lala Brooks and to Nathan Gothels of Affordable Music Productions. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Jessica Greenwell, Mike Pesavento, and Sasha Chavez. Beyond the music of the Overons, the Mystics, and Lala Brooks, solo and with the Crystals, music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts are composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.